You're listening to the Down East Journal on Public Radio East. I'm Jared Brumbaugh in the studio this afternoon with George Olson. We're raising funds to support your public radio station and the Down East Journal. To make your pledge, give online at publicradioeast.org.
And what these fund drives are all about is always quite simple. We're just asking you to pay whatever you can afford so we can pay off the bills that we've incurred to present all your favorite programs here on Public Radio East, whether it's the Down East Journal that you're listening to right now, or perhaps weekend favorites like A Prairie Home Companion and Car Talk. That's what your pledge is paying for. So no matter the size of your pledge, please become a member right now. You can do so online at publicradioeast.org.
And we're asking you to do your part. We're asking you to decide an amount that fits into your budget. We're just asking that you participate by making your pledge at publicradioeast.org. Think about how much you enjoy having access to this local news programming, the Down East Journal. Support it today with your pledge at publicradioeast.org.
Now, perhaps one of the reasons you enjoy listening to the Down East Journal is because we let you know what's happening in our area. We like to highlight cultural events that are happening in the eastern North Carolina region. Recent events that we've covered include the Kitchens of New Bern tour that benefited the Food Bank of Central and Eastern North Carolina. Also, the North Carolina Symphony was recently in New Bern, and we talked to them prior to the concert. You listen to the Down East Journal to find out about theater productions, live music performances, fascinating exhibits here in eastern North Carolina. Your pledge helps to make that happen. So pledge online at publicradioeast.org.
Today, we're learning about a new development for the Beaufort County Arts Council. They serve Beaufort, Hyde, and Washington counties. Since the Arts Council started more than 40 years ago, they've been operating out of the old train depot. But in September, the organization announced they had acquired the historic Turnage Theater. Executive Director Joey Toler hopes they'll be in their new location by December.
I don't know if we're going to be able to start actually doing programming that quickly or have the building available for rent. We would like to. We're already getting calls where a lot of people would like to have some Christmas events there.
The 100-year-old landmark Turnage Theater was purchased by the Beaufort County Arts Council for $250,000 after 2 years in limbo.
We got a loan from one of our local banks. Our local committee of 100 loaned us the money for our down payment. We got a sizable donation from the Washington Harbor District Alliance, which is our downtown revitalization group.
Toler says if all goes according to plan, the Beaufort County Arts Council plans to have the mortgage paid off in 1 year. Despite the efforts of the Turnage Theater Foundation, the facility closed in 2011 because of financial difficulties during the economic downturn. As the theater was going up for auction, Toler says the city of Washington approached him and asked if the Beaufort County Arts Council could relocate to the facility.
They asked me to think about that and what that would look like, and over the past year, the situation had kind of changed. The city was not able to get the theater for a price that they felt comfortable with. But I started working with our downtown revitalization group and a couple of other interested parties that realized the value of having the theater open. And we came up with a business plan, a vision for the theater, and made an offer that the banks ultimately accepted.
The Beaufort County Arts Council is very excited for the prospect of using such a beautiful and ornate building for their events. The theater was originally built as a vaudeville theater in 1913 and named after its owner, C.A. Turnage. 25 years later, it became a movie theater.
Because they weren't sure that movies were going to catch on, they actually made the stage a little bit bigger so it could also be a performance stage as well.
For nearly 50 years, people flocked to the Turnage Theater to watch movies. But by the 70s, other larger movie theaters began to move into eastern North Carolina. With the neglected theater falling into disrepair, it closed its doors for the first time in 1978. Some 20 years later, a group of historic preservation enthusiasts teamed up with arts advocates to form the nonprofit Turnage Theater Foundation. The goal was to acquire and renovate to historically accurate standards the crumbling Turnage. Bob Schultz was the treasurer for the Turnage Theater Foundation. He remembers the theater's condition before they started restoring it.
This place was just an utter disaster. The ceiling had caved in. The pigeons were living in here. You had to scoop out the pigeon droppings in here. The smell was overwhelming. To walk in here when it was still just at the beginning stages, you would have thought it was impossible to reach the stage that it did.
After an extensive $5 million renovation, the foundation struggled to repay $2 million borrowed to complete the process. Increasing costs and dwindling support from individual and corporate sponsors shuttered the Turnage Theater again in 2011. Even as the building sat vacant for 2 years, Beaufort County Arts Council Executive Director Joey Toller says the facility was maintained, lights were never turned off, and the building was kept at a steady temperature.
None of the equipment that is in the theater is damaged. I mean, all sound, light, everything is still in great condition. The theater itself is in great condition.
Before the Turnage can reopen, Toller says there's still some work that needs to be done, such as replacing two neon tubes and the classic Turnage Theater sign outside on Main Street. He says the inside needs some attention as well.
It needs a little dusting and cleaning up and really very minor things we have to do before we move in. We're not going to do any major structural changes. The administrative offices are already in a condition that we can adapt and essentially move in and turn the lights on, and we're ready to go.
A cleanup event is being held this weekend when volunteers and staff will dust, vacuum, and tidy up the theater. Toller says the Arts Council has exciting plans for the future. They want to start offering a children's theater program.
We do believe there's a pent-up demand for that in the area. We hear that a lot from our patrons. And we used to have a very active community theater in Beaufort County and in Washington, and we're going to hopefully bring that back as well.
Toller says having complete access to the theater's large stage allows the Beaufort County Arts Council to grow into more of a presenting organization.
We're going to take our time and grow into this new entity that we're expecting to become. So we're going to do what we do already out of the theater and then kind of add performances as we go along. It takes about a year to really plan a season in advance.
In the meantime, Toller says they plan to host a variety of local arts organizations and performers, such as orchestras and choral societies. They also hope to schedule acts that may be traveling through the area to perform at the Turnage. For more information on the Beaufort County Arts Council and their upcoming events, go to beaufortcountyartscouncil.org. I'm Jared Brumbaugh.
You're listening to the Downeast Journal here on PRE, Public Radio East. I'm George Olson. Jared Brumbaugh is with me, and we're asking you to join us as well. It's the Fall Fund Drive at Public Radio East, and we're raising the necessary funds to keep all your favorite programs here on the air in Eastern North Carolina, be it the Downeast Journal or weekend favorites like An Evening with Tom the Jazzman or Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. When you hear those programs, there are your pledge dollars at work. So make a pledge now. You can do so online at publicradioeast.org.
You may have tuned in to the Fall Fund Drive already at Public Radio East, and you may be asking yourself, why is my pledge so important? Well, as we learned from this previous story, it was a lack of support from corporate sponsors and individuals that ultimately led to the Turnage Theater to close down in 2011. And the way that Downeast Journal is funded and the way that Public Radio East is funded is kind of in the same way, through individuals and corporate sponsors. And without your support, Public Radio East and programs like the Downeast Journal would cease to exist. You can see how important your pledge is today. Please support your public radio station and the Downeast Journal. Make your pledge at publicradioeast.org.
Now, Public Radio East will soon be celebrating its 30th anniversary, and the financial picture at Public Radio East has changed so much in those 30 years. When we first signed on back in 1984, I believe it was, The funding was primarily from the states and from the federal government. Well, we lost all our state funding about 3 years back. About two fiscal years ago, we lost about $90,000 in federal dollars. And actually, those dollars had been kind of dwindling as the years went by. Today, the primary source of funds we use to get these programs on the air, listener contributions. Well over 50% of the funds we use to get the Downeast Journal and all your favorites on the air come from folks just like you. That's why your pledge is so important. So if you haven't made the pledge as of yet, please do so now, because again, we're going to take the money you send to us, send it back to you in the form of great programs you enjoy right here on Public Radio East. Make that pledge online at publicradioeast.org.
And in a way, we kind of like funding the public radio station that way, because that's what public radio is all about. It's you, it's me, it's everyone chipping in, doing their part to support this public radio service that we call Public Radio East. We've been here for 30 years almost, and that's because of past listener support, people making pledges during fund drive time. So we're asking that you would step up to the table, that you would do your part, make that pledge at publicradioeast.org. As you've heard us say before, it doesn't matter the amount you give. What matters is that you participate.
Yeah, again, everybody chipping in a manner that is comfortable to them. If a $20 pledge to Public Radio East is where you feel comfortable, that makes you a member in good standing at Public Radio East. If you can afford a $240 pledge, we'll make you a day sponsor here at Public Radio East. And the day sponsors, where you get to take a day, put your name on it. Maybe your kids are graduating from high school. We'll announce the good news to all of Eastern North Carolina about a half a dozen times on that particular day. So consider making that day sponsorship pledge of $240. You can do so now online at publicradioeast.org.
Diabetes is a growing concern for North Carolinians, especially for people who live in the eastern part of the state, where studies have shown diabetes cases are rampant. East Carolina University's Brody School of Medicine is looking to curb the diabetes rate by offering people who live in rural areas access to healthcare specialists using new telemedicine methods. Today, Public Radio East's Mac McKee talks to the professor of family medicine and public health, Dr. Doyle Cummings, about how the new video conferencing technology works and how it would be implemented here in Eastern North Carolina.
Dr. Cummings, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I know that medical technology and the need for people to get the help that they have to have medically in Eastern North Carolina can be a challenge. When was the idea to set up a video teleconferencing along with a lot of the diabetes cases that you saw in Eastern North Carolina? When was that deemed a necessity?
Thanks for your question. East Carolina University's had a long history, almost 20 years of experience with telemedicine dating back to when this technology first came on the marketplace, and we've seen the use of this technology grow in a variety of areas, in cardiology and psychiatry and dermatology and a variety of areas. But to date, we've really done very little for the patient out in our rural areas that may have diabetes. And so about a year and a half ago, we began to conceive of this idea of bringing a team, really a team of professionals that could come alongside that rural primary care physician and help him or her manage the patient with diabetes a little bit better.
And Dr. Cummings, what is the difference between, say, type 1 and type 2 diabetes?
Well, type 1 diabetes usually occurs as a result of like an autoimmune phenomenon, is much more common in children, so it occurs at a much earlier age. Generally, certainly not all the time, but generally speaking, those individuals are thinner, and that's contrasted with the folks who develop type 2 diabetes, who are usually adults and usually tend to be overweight and develop it in their, say, 40s, 50s, and 60s.
Now, what is the percentage, Dr. Cummings, of people in Eastern North Carolina with type 2 diabetes as opposed to the rest of the state?
Well, it's hard to say exactly about type 2 diabetes because when most of the surveys are done, it measures both type 1 and type 2 diabetes. Type 2 diabetes is a whole lot more common. But overall, the prevalence of diabetes is around 10% of the adult population. And we think that if you look specifically at certain subsets of our population, and in particular individuals of color, African Americans, Native Americans, etc., that may reside in Eastern North Carolina, it may be as close to 20%, so almost twice as high in minority populations.
Now, how does the video conferencing work when it comes to getting to your patients? What's the procedure?
Basically, what we'd like to do is to, as I said, come alongside the rural primary care provider who's often out there by himself or herself without a whole lot of resources, either in their office or in their community. And so the idea is that when a rural primary care provider sees a diabetic patient and realizes that they have some problems managing their disease, that could really benefit from them seeing a nutritionist, a pharmacist, a psychologist. What we'll try to do is immediately set up a consultation through this live interactive system, have the patient get in front of the telemedicine unit at the distant location in the doctor's office, and have our team be ready here in our coordinating center and to be in front of the telemedicine unit here and begin to interact with that patient and understand what those problems are and see if we can provide some both consultation to the provider as well as some education and training to the patient.
Now, what are some of the cities and towns in eastern North Carolina close by in our area that has access to this video conferencing?
We're going to try and place these units in 7 different locations around the area, and so those will be places like Tarboro and Pine Tops over in Edgecombe County, Windsor, which is in Bertie County. We're going to have a spot in Aurora in Beaufort County. We'll be working with 3 sites actually in Duplin County, one of which will be in Faison and 2 of which will be in Wallace, North Carolina.
So it sounds like it's a pretty wide distribution. Now, Dr. Dennis Russo is a psychologist that works with you at this program. And how is important to get your patients prepared mentally for the, coping with the diabetic lifestyle?
Yeah, that's an important issue. And we've really found a very high prevalence of individuals with diabetes who really have a lot of distress and even depression associated with managing their disease. As you can imagine, it's a very challenging disease, particularly as time goes by and they develop, you know, more and more complications. And so the presence of a psychologist who can help them understand some of the things that they're going through and specifically give them some behavioral techniques that they can use to cope better with some of these challenges really helps them to be able to manage their disease much more easily.
Now, do you see with your grant in years in the future that a lot of, if not all of Eastern North Carolina will have these video conferencing abilities to help deal with diabetes?
I think that's really an unknown as of right now, and that's just because as you know, and as the rest of the country knows, our health insurance and health delivery system is under tremendous change right now. There's all sorts of unclear challenges that make it hard to answer that. I would say that I do believe this is a very valuable technology because once you get the equipment in the location, then it opens up lots of doors. So in addition to helping the patients in that practice that have diabetes, we could maybe help those that also need to see a cardiologist or need to see a dermatologist or need to see a psychiatrist. So placing the equipment there is really something that's a valuable step forward, I believe.
Thank you so much for helping spearheading this pioneering program, and best of luck to you in the future with it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Downey's Journal. I'm Jared Brumbaugh, George Olson here. To make your pledge to Public Radio East during our fall fund drive, go online at publicradioeast.org.
Undoubtedly, you've been listening to Public Radio East for a long time, and almost undoubtedly, it's a given that you've probably heard something at some point that spurred you to action in some way. Maybe it was something you heard on the Garden Journal that made you change something you were doing in your own backyard, or perhaps you heard about a book on All Things Considered that's just caused you to go out and buy that book instantly because you were just so interested in what they had to say. Well, we're hoping that what you've heard on Public Radio East is valuable enough to you that you'll back it up with a pledge, because over 50% of the funds we use to get that information to you comes from folks just like you, and that's what these fund drives are all about, just raising the necessary funds to pay the bills that we incur to present programs like the Down East Journal, like All Things Considered, like a Prairie Home Companion. That's what your pledge pays for. So a pledge in any amount makes you a member. Make a pledge online now at publicradioeast.org.
Now, as you've been listening to the Down East Journal, you may have heard stories about the impact of the government shutdown on military bases in eastern North Carolina. You may have heard about the ferry crew that was honored for saving their captain's life. You may have heard medical stories about the new non-invasive treatment for treating depression that's now available in eastern North Carolina. Or maybe it was the telemedicine report we heard earlier. You know that when you tune into the Down East Journal, you're always going to hear stories that inform you, stories that entertain you, stories that make you aware of what's happening in our community. And as a result, you're a more informed person. If you appreciate having that connection to our community that you get from listening to the Down East Journal, then please say thank you by making a pledge. Go online at publicradioeast.org. Your pledge is so important to us.
Listening to the Downeast Journal makes you more aware of what is happening in our community. And coincidentally, it's the community we turn to get these programs on the air. So it's a symbiotic relationship. You rely on us for news and information and entertainment. We rely on you for the funding to make that all happen. So if you have made your pledge already, thank you so much. The Downeast Journal today is a return on your investment. But if we haven't heard from you as of yet, we still have a way to go to make sure we can fully fund the station and present all the great programs you love on Public Radio East. If you haven't made your pledge as of yet, to pledge in any amount makes you a member, pledge online now at publicradioeast.org.
This is Ann Edwards, Horticulture Extension Agent, with this week's entry in the Garden Journal. You know that I have four hens that live in a coop and run in my back garden, and I love them dearly. Those hens each take turns every year molting. They lose a large number of their old feathers and put on fresh feathers. And during the molt, they stop laying eggs. Right now, Diana, my Americana hen, she's a blue hen, which is actually a beautiful color of gray, is molting. And it's the first time she's molted since I acquired her. The funny thing is, Diana is my most beautiful hen of all I've ever had. And she lays the most gorgeous blue-green eggs you've ever seen. So I've been missing those blue-green eggs. But mostly, I'm missing the beautiful Diana. I have to tell you, that hen in molt is the ugliest thing I have ever seen. And when I look at her, I can't help but wonder, does it feel great or does it feel bad? She doesn't seem like she feels embarrassed of how she appears. So I'm guessing that it feels good to slough off the old and put on the new, no matter what it looks like in the process. Anyway, the more important thing about my chickens, they eat most of the scraps from my garden. Right now, as I've been having dozens of large gourds maturing on the Italian gourd plant that I grow, I've been splitting those gourds in half down the middle while they're still green and setting them in the coop. And the hens love picking the seeds and flesh from the inside. It keeps me from having to just toss them over the fence into the marsh to decompose. So I use those hens as sort of a compost heap. They go through the process of shredding and eating all the leftovers, and then they produce a wonderful manure that can be used in my garden. But I have something else that I keep for compost as well, and those are vermicomposting worms. They are an excellent way of composting smaller amounts of plant material, especially if you don't have a big yard in which to do other types of composting. A worm bin can be a fairly small, double deep set of plastic tubs, about 1.5 by 2.5 feet, and about 18 inches deep. Into that bin, you put worms and bedding made from shredded newspaper and food scraps. And what you get out is this delightful worm juice that can be diluted further and used to water your garden, as well as worm castings, the solid residue left behind from fully decomposed organic matter. Both of these are just spectacular in the garden, in your flower beds, or even in your potted plants in the house. And anyone can have a worm bin. They really take up very little space. When managed properly, they have no smell other than, well, the aroma like new soil. But don't think you can go out in the yard and just dig up worms and make a worm bin. You need to use red wigglers, worms that live in litter on top of the soil and whose job is to decompose organic matter. And you can buy those at many different places, but be sure you get the right kind. If you're interested in building a worm bin and in having them to decompose some of your scraps from the kitchen, go to your County Cooperative Extension website or call your County Cooperative Extension office and ask them for instructions on worm bins. So when I go home today, I'll just smile at poor Diana as she's trying to grow her feathers back. I'll pat my worm bin on the top and tell the worms hello as I walk by. And then I'll talk to you in next week's entry in the Garden Journal.
Thanks for listening to the Downeast Journal. Even more, thank you for your support of the Downeast Journal and all of the programs on Public Radio East. If you've not made a pledge, you can do so at publicradioeast.org.
Again, you can pledge at publicradioeast.org, and no matter the size of your pledge, you become a member in good standing here at Public Radio East. So please don't let the size of your pledge be a hurdle to becoming a member at Public Radio East. It's just important that all the community involve themselves so we can continue to present this great resource in Eastern North Carolina, and that is Public Radio East, presenting all your favorite programs here. So make that pledge in any amount now. You can reach us at publicradioeast.org.
Be a supporting member of the Public Radio East community. Do your part right now online at publicradioeast.org.